I've made it home. Okay. And I'm ready. I'm going to tape this conversation, if that's okay with you.
Okay. Hold on. I'm just trying to go to a quiet place
here. Okay, sure.
My movable telephone. And see, now more noise here. Can you still read me well from here?
I can read you well.
In the back room. Okay, I'll probably get most quiet here. So what can I tell you about the great Lord Buckley?
Well, I guess you have this great story to tell, first of all, about the time he came to the Living Theater during the performance of The Connection, I believe?
Yes, that's right. That's right. But before that, the Living Theater had remodeled a department store on 14th Street into a three-story theater plant. And we had, therefore, a big lobby, and we worked very hard on it. We did all the cement schlepping ourselves, and I learned how to lay bricks and mix mortar, and we did a whole big renovation job there. Hundreds of good artists giving their elbow grease. And it was during that time first that we first met Lord Buckley, because he used to appear in the midst of our labors and put on spectacular little events to inspire us on in our sweaty work. He came in and did little numbers about art and social justice, but, you know, on his level of art and social justice, not to mention art and sexual justice, which often entered into the question. We would all lay down our sacks and our bricks and gather around, and people come in from the third floor and the basement and the plumbers. And it was just a great inspiration. He would do, you know, his inimitable shtick. Who can even say what they were about, except that they were all about everything and the here and now. And he was, in a certain sense, a great inspiration to us about, you know, about where the source of the new energy was. And in a way, you can't say that in the long run that hasn't even won out. I mean, that the culture has changed and did change from such sparks of inspiration that amounted to something by the 60s. When we did The Connection, which was in that genre of the belief that the true philosophy of our time was coming out of, shall we say, the brothels of New Orleans, or wherever you want to say jazz found its beginnings, and the lofts of Harlem, where certain spirit of the truth was being spoken in a way that was a very different kind of philosophy than the philosophy of the school books and the university, and was in some way that inspired tone that Lord Buckley took in his parody of the social structure that went from, you know, the clothes he wore to the accent he adopted to the title in his name, was a whole way of saying, look again at these structures and look what they really are, and they too contain the truth, but the truth is raunchy. And in some way, in The Connection, I think we were inspired by that style. In the general way in which he was part of a whole river of concept and sentiment that turned the world around and turned it to something much more nitty gritty and real and marvelous than the false poetics of the philosophers of tradition. And when we were doing The Connection, he showed up again, and sometimes even in rehearsal. But finally, on the when the event and the opening came, there he was, and there he was in the lobby of the 14th Street Theater, and in some way, in The Connection, the actors come out and panhandle the audience for money to buy dope during the intermission. And
as part of the show?
As part of the show. Mm-hmm. And that whole part of the show and the way that Jim Anderson came out and did a little shtick was really inspired by the way that Lord Buckley did his shtick. And he came into the intermission of The Connection, and not always, but certainly the first night, and opened out the whole Pirandellian reality about what's real and what's performance for us in a very big way. You know, am I acting or am I a spectator?
Mm-hmm.
Am I for real or am I pretending? Am I really a lord or am I a phony? Is the phony the reality? Is the reality the phoniness? And are they both holy?
Yeah, this is kind of some of the things I was wondering about, in that the living theater began to really break down that boundary and the concepts that of theater at that time. Buckley seemed to sort of anticipate a lot of that stuff with his work.
He certainly did. Of course, there's always been the question is a classical question. And there is this Italian playwright, Luigi Pirandello, whom we had performed years before that, who was already dealing with that question. And Paul Goodman dealt with the question in Cristina, in which he had the actors break out of the fourth wall altogether. And we used it also in our first play in 1951 in the Cherry Lane. In William Carlos Williams' Many Loves, because William Carlos Williams was concerned with the question of reality in the theater, and who's the spectator and who's the actor and what's the difference between them and why is there this fake wall.
And I guess Yeats too, like the dancer and the dance. And
right. I think it's a classical question. And we are taking ever more steps to dissolve it. The last play, The Zero Method, that I just did and just toured. We toured 14 cities in Italy. We just come back from there on the 5th of this month. Was all about that. Was all about breaking through to the audience and talking to the audience, getting the audience to talk, and saying this is a false division between us. Let's not maintain it anymore. And of course, Paradise Now was all about that too, in the more vibrant vocabulary of the 1968. And I think that Lord Buckley was a forerunner to the whole question of what's formal, what's informal, what's phony, what's true, what's holy, what's real, who the hell are you, and who the hell am I?
Mm-hmm.
And I think his combination of philosophical elegance with a kind of lowbrow, highbrow game that he played about which vocabulary he was using, that is the elegance of his ability to speak in a very highly modulated, educated tone, and at the same time to be able to be so truthful about the realities of this world.
And evoke the idiom of the streets, no matter what streets he happened to be walking on.
That's right. That was his street and his idiom right away.
What? This was like around 59 or 60 that the connection was happening?
59. Right.
I find it kind of ironic, too, just because the connection used, I don't know who else, but I know Jackie McLean couldn't perform because of cabaret card problems that he was having at the time, but that ended up being Buckley's downfall himself. Did you know that?
Yeah. No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that that was true.
Yeah, he ran.
I know that it meant that the Living Theater, which is a theater that could hardly pay any money, and we never could, and we don't have enough seats to really be able to support a company in the way that actors should be paid, and we still don't to this day. We're still not able to do that, much to my sorrow. But that at that time we were able to get the great musicians to come and be in the connection. Of course, Jackie's a real artist and a real actor too. You know, he's ambitious to go on acting. I just spoke to him a couple of days ago.
Yeah, What a sax player, man.
He still dreams of being an actor. And, you know, in a way, Lord Buckley's whole inspiration really created a language and created a vocabulary that became a form of thinking, not only a form of speaking. And I think that form of thinking, I think that, you know, what Lenny Bruce later did to liberate the prudery out of language and performance, what a lot of people did, was inspired right there from that spark of genius. And you know, Lord Buckley was a genius. I didn't know he had this trouble with cabaret.
Oh, yeah, that actually, the working theory is that it ultimately led to his death, because he came to New York in 1960 to perform and falsified information to get his cabaret card, and saying that he had never been arrested before, when in fact he had been arrested, and he was actually dragged from the stage in mid-performance and subject to several weeks of police harassment, and suffered a seizure at that point and passed away. And there was a, you know,
but
big...
he was in New York in 1959.
Well, he was coming in and out of the city a lot. I mean,
he
was most...
I know we saw him when we were building the Living Theater, and that was earlier.
That, when you were building the Living Theater, that was like 58 or something?
58 or something.
Yeah. Yeah, he was mostly based in California, but he would come to the city to do the Sullivan Show or something like that.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, and then he'd drop in at the Living Theater.
I want to get back to the inspirational quality for a sec. The fact that he was an older gentleman, did that have something to do with inspiring you too? Because I guess you weren't kids, but you were much younger than he was, right?
Well, I think it was very, it made us very happy to see that there was a, you know, that we were not an isolated phenomena, but in a way that the spirit of cultural rebellion had always been there. And that that an older person, of course, for me, I was already, I was already 30, mm-hmm. 29, 30.
But he was in his early 50s by that point.
And I was thinking, you know, I don't have to, you know, they were saying don't trust anybody over 30 at that time. And I was thinking, the hell, don't trust him, I trust him with my soul.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So that being 30, I didn't have to feel, you know, I had to stop making revolution because I was now going into another period, or that somehow I would decline. And here I am, I'm 66, and I haven't given up on the beautiful nonviolent anarchist revolution one iota.
Yeah, right.
I'm fighting it as much as ever with, if not as much energy, certainly as much, a lot more smart than I had then. And you know, and I can look back on Lord Buckley's energy and say, hey, you know, we aren't so bad. I'm 66. I hope I'm still able to do what I can and travel the world and say, hey, don't give up on it, because it's a static period and the pendulum is in the downswing. It's coming up again. I hope I can still do it when I'm 88. But I think that it's such people that inspire us to feel that the energetic, active, hot form of life isn't really over when you get your first gray hair, and after that, you know, fuck it, you're a has-been, and you're over the hill, and it's nothing anymore.
Well, that really has nothing to do with age, ultimately. It has to do with one's own personal vision and the way that they act out on that in their life.
And Buckley's vision was, you know, so clear and so strong, and I think it will always be with us, because it has... It forms rings upon rings through the generation.
But yet he is somewhat neglected outside a very...
He is unfortunately neglected. I hope you're going to help.
Yeah, so do I. Why do you think that's the case? I mean, why do we only go back as far as Lenny Bruce when we look at that oeuvre, and not to the next, you know, to the next step beyond? I mean, it's kind of like going to Charlie Parker.
Because people forget.
And maybe because Lenny was a little more...
He had a lot of books. A lot of books about Lenny out.
And the use of four-letter words and all that, I suppose, made him notorious in a certain way, too.
Oh, sure.
Did Buckley have an entourage around him? Do you remember the bunch of people around him?
You know, I don't remember him except as a loner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he may have had an entourage in other situations, but when he came to the Living Theater, he came alone.
And you mentioned his dress before. Was he dressed very...
He was a flashy dresser. He wore rather outrageous clothes in bright, light, outrageous colors, but always in some way representing the gentleman, or
mm-hmm.
the title Lord somewhere there. So that it was like his speech, a parody of fine dress,
mm-hmm.
with a lot of humorous winks about, hey, get this velvet jacket.
Dig these threads, like...
What?
Like, dig these threads.
Yes, yes, exactly. Now, in fact, right now, his clothes would be very fashionable and ordinary downtown, because people wear those, outrageous parodies of dress suits and so on.
Yeah, he was kind of a hippie and a new wave.
He had a hippie new wave pop art thing that was much before its time, that was not even generally comprehended, but that was, a seed that not only came to fruit in the 60s, but it's still coming to fruit.
Right, sure.
You know, it's still happening. I hope that your book will open people's eyes to this history, and a lot of other people will rally around and say, yes, this was a teacher of ours.
That's why I'm in it. You know, I just think that this is not only is he a forgotten soul, but the whole atmosphere that he evoked shouldn't be neglected, shouldn't be forgotten.
Sure, we're still fighting that revolution, you know.
I think it's always been fighting for
the other day, all of us theaters that get a little bit of something from the government got this directive that we had to sign that we would say nothing obscene on stage.
Yeah, right. The NEA.
Including not saying anything, not mentioning the subject of homosexuality. Now, how about that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, we're still fighting that fight.
Sounds like
we're
Weimar Germany.
About what we're allowed to talk about, and we're still fighting about that kind of liberatory behavior that says I am the revolution that Lord Buckley brought to us.
But basically in a very peaceful way, too. I mean, he was, he seemed to be ultimately a pacifist, too, you know. I mean, it was...
I certainly never heard him say anything that was unnecessarily cruel or vicious. I think he thought the social structure was vicious, but I think that he felt what he was showing us was a way to battle it with the best in us,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
rather than with the worst in us, which is violence. It's in all of us, but it's the worst in us.
Right.
And he was saying, use the best in us, which is humor and love and rising above the situation with aplomb and imagination and bursts of energy.
Well, that's kind of what I'm going to get to. This, my next question is, you know, this whole idea of lords and ladies and, you know, queens and kings. He seemed to believe that if we all treat each other like royalty, that the world would be a much rosier place.
Well, it's a question of what the word noble really means, you know?
Is it something you're born to, or is it something that you act?
It's something that you are or you can become, I think.
Right.
You know, it's a form of feeling an obligation to your fellow human being, of being the steward of each other's happiness. And, you know, serving each other on this highest level of noble behavior, which is never self-serving, but always... The finest word in the sense of the word noble, of course, this was become debauched into this hideous hierarchy. And what Buckley did is he parodied the hideousness and came to, for instance... this little secret strangeness of the English language, that these people who could call themselves anything decided that the word for them was gentlemen. Now, they were far from gentle. Gentlemen. They carried swords and they behaved like boors and they cut off the heads of the peasants at any of the slightest even at no provocation when it pleased them. But what they wanted to be, what they aspired to, because that's what they wanted to call themselves, was gentlemen. Hello?
Yeah, I'm losing you.
I'm sorry?
I said I'm losing you a little bit here.
Yes, I hear a strange sound here. I don't know what's happened to our connection.
The connection.
The connection, yes.
Hey, did he give you any titles? Did he call you, you know, Lady Judith of Molina?
Yes, I think so, yes.
That
well,
was...
I ran the theater, you know, so it's natural.
He gave nicknames to the people around him,
yes,
or...
Yes, indeed he did. I had forgotten. I had forgotten because it was embarrassing.
That was...
Yes.
I guess
theater
then we...
Theater queen. I was definitely the theater queen.
Theater queen?
The theater queen.
I guess we've just about covered everything, in a short bit here, but I'm going to send you a release at one point. I was just wondering if you could give me your address.
Yes, 800 West End Avenue.
Okay.
Apartment 5A.
Okay.
New York, 125.
25, wonderful. Well, Queen Judith of the Theater.
Okay.
I want to thank you very much. See, you had a lot to say. You thought you were going to be only talking to me for 2 minutes, and you wanted for a half hour.
I'm really amazed. You're a wonderful interviewer.
Thank you.
I hope you're a wonderful writer because Lord Buckley deserves that.
Well, I hope so. And if nothing else, I just want people to get hip to these great works and.
Yeah.
And this great man, and these great people around him, because as the time between his death passes and now, there be people who have something to say become fewer and farther between. So,
great.
I will be in contact, and I want to thank you again very, very much.
Don't forget to talk to Steve Israel, who will have.
Oh yeah, you know he's been helping me a lot along the way.
Wonderful person.
Oh yeah, I've known him for years.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay, thanks for talking to me about it, and thanks for writing a book about Lord Buckley.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.